It's the Second Cup of Joe and John with Joe Elvis and John Dwyer.
Joe!
Hey, sir. Greetings. Boy, it's top-down weather, partner.
No
Ford Mustang lover.
Yeah, it's been good. I've had a few road trips, St. Louis, one of them, and last weekend it was good.
The 5.0 2017 six-speed stick, black convertible of mine, top down.
Ten-speed for me, got the flippers, flappers, what do you even call
it? That thing?
Yeah.
What? Roush?
Roush, yeah. Yeah,
top down.
About 10 to a gallon.
It's just, I can watch the needle.
I just
watch the needle. I think I filled it up like four times going
there. So we love the car wash. I did it myself for years when I was younger. Had the old buck. I had my own setup. Loved the mother's products. Would wash it. Would wax it. And now, probably like you got not the subscription, but you go to the car wash where you can zoom it through yourself.
They lose money on me.
And then, yeah.
By
48
far.
Bucks a month, and you can go as many times as you want, and you take advantage of that. So, leading to the question, don't you love when people play their music while you're washing your car? And you get to experience all cross-cultural centers of music within 5 feet of you?
Somebody's at our door at the JAG International headquarters. Sorry about that, Lola. In fact, I did a Facebook post of that.
Oh, you did.
And there are 1 to 10, I always say 1 to 10 pet peeve. This is at a 12.5 for me. It should be a 2. I don't care what nationality you are. And they actually have the car wash I go to in East Nashville. He's nasty. They have signs up that say no loud music.
Yeah.
I have been tempted to go and just point and then have the person see me do, like, how do you, and you know what? I just want to live another day. And so but it really bothers me. It does. I didn't come there to listen to your music.
No, I find it funny. And why would you choose this place, this venue, to turn it up as loud as you can when there's 60 people within 12 feet?
And I'm thinking it's usually a dude.
Pretty bold.
It's usually a dude. And the dude, I'm like, dude, is this your pickup? Is this like
this
your,
is
this how you get chicks? Is
that
you got, people
flock.
Are going to go, wow, you got that
thing.
That you got that, you know, whatever that car is, you know, and you're just blaring your side pipers or what? I mean, your treble and bass or what? What do you do? What's the big speakers?
Thump.
Well, stereo was good when we were kids. Mm-hmm. That was, you had to have a good stereo, sure. Right?
Pioneer
that was
speakers.
Pioneer. EQ. There you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, now you're talking.
Mm-hmm.
Q quadraphonic.
I had the equalizer in the dash. Mm, that's good stuff. But now they've got the whole.
Is that what got Kimmy?
The whole back end of their cars, they'll rip out and put a subwoofer. And
right.
That's the boom.
They won't have any air, and they'll have a broken window.
I've
got to have that.
So play it as loud as you can, John.
All right, let's get to our guest.
Yeah. Oh,
let's do it.
See, let's try it again. One more time. There we go.
That button is broken.
Let's take a spin through Joe and John's Rolodex.
Oh, my God.
I'm kidding. I think I sprained. I got a tennis elbow trying to hit. Would you agree? Now, I guess we'll reveal in a second. Did it look like I was making an effort?
You are. You're making a great effort.
Yeah. And actually, a pro here. It stops. Our Rolodex starts on.
It's never, ever.
It stops.
Ever.
What?
Stopped on.
Kevin Ingram.
There's only one other in our eye.
John Ingram. Is that the other one in your eyes?
Yeah, he hasn't returned our emails to beyond the second cup of Joe. And John, but thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
Radio veteran guy that if you grew up in Nashville, Nashville-centric, we love to have people that have lived the dream, have been in broadcasting. And here's three guys not broadcasting. I don't know. It was a good run.
It's a testament.
But anyway, Kevin, good to see you. Thanks for being here. You got a lot going on, but we'd love to kind of go back. This is evergreen, so we're not going to talk about the Preds playing tonight or anything like that, right? We're not going to do that, Joe.
What, game two, Vancouver?
Yeah. Okay.
Joe's got his pen and everything. This is impressive.
We're season ticket holders. We are a hockey house. My sons love it. And Joey's walking around. We got to get it tonight. I'm just relax. It's a 7-game series.
Two games
come back to Nashville. But I love the NHL playoffs. We can get down
it's
hockey.
Because awesome. It really is.
Hockey's about the only thing not on your resume that you call. but you did. We'll go there. So, 17 years, Belmont basketball, you called. Vandy's play-by-play man for two decades? A decade?
Yeah, it's kind of been, like I've worked with Vanderbilt for over 20 years.
20 years,
doing various jobs, whether it's sidelines for football or TV for baseball and soccer and basketball, and do radio for basketball. Just finished up my fourth season. So, yeah, a long time with Vanderbilt. Been a lot of fun. A lot of different roles around Nashville, which we'll talk about.
Your current position now?
Yeah, I work at Vanderbilt full-time now.
Okay.
Yeah.
The director of digital operations, I believe, yes, which we don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means
yet. Okay. Well, so what's your day like at Vanderbilt?
We do a little bit of everything, kind of depending on what's in season. Like I'm doing, as we record this, I'm doing baseball tonight, doing TV, and then this weekend series against Mississippi State. Usually do about 25 games on TV for baseball. Basketball, it's home and road. It's all of it. Football, I work on the broadcast again, home and road. We do a Monday night show, coaches show, do podcast, and work when we do the Hall of Fame ceremony and part of that, or if we have some big introduction like we did with Mark Byington a couple weeks ago, we'll help out with those things. So it's all different things. It's a lot of fun, and I do a daily update too on 102.5 and 94.9. It runs about 8:55. Do that every day, just kind of a little update on what all's going on. So
that's fabulous. That's
a lot of people know your voice because you have. I mean, you just got great pipes. Okay, you just do. Okay, Joe is gifted, very distinct. I'm kind of, I don't know, I sound like a guy that sold you furniture rooms to go or something.
It's familiar.
No. Well, is it?
I think it is.
But it's just velvety. But doing morning radio and being kind of in that, yes, there was the sports talk radio of the, WLAC with Bob Bell and Bill King and all that was kind of a golden age, but also morning sports talk, morning radio. You guys, Mark Howard and Bishop, and you guys were really just it. And what a great run you had during a really important segment of not only the popularity of pro sports, but then to have James Franklin and have Vandy have success, Predators in the playoffs. You guys were kind of like appointment. And when I got out of TV, I didn't listen to anybody but you guys. That was it. I was on the road a lot in the morning. Occasionally, you took my calls. I'm sure the screen always like,
you had the
did I had the red light number, hotline? So, yeah. But just talk about that era and how much fun that was, or was it fun?
It was really fun. Yeah. The first 14 years, it was me and Mark and Frank Wycheck, and then the last couple of years, it was with Blaine Bishop. He was a lot of fun too. But I think early on, we figured out that we had some good chemistry, even though we were three guys in very different backgrounds. Frank, the former pro athlete, Mark, who's been in TV and radio for years and years, and me from just kind of around this area. And I'd worked over it, to go back a little bit. I worked at WSM and WTN for a few years, got here in 98, worked there until 2004. And then they decided that they were going to start on 104.5 The Zone, a morning show. They had started the station in 2003. They flipped formats. And then they decided we want to do a morning sports talk show. And that was something I had thought for years that this market really needed, was something to where you get that first reaction after a big Titans game on a Sunday or a big Preds game or a big basketball game or whatever. That next morning, you get that first crack at the reaction. And so they put us together. And I remember like one of our first meetings, our original producer was a guy named Paul Bible. And we met over at Nashville in Midtown. And we all sat there and we talked about how it was going to work and what we were going to do. And you could tell right away that we had good chemistry, just guys from different backgrounds. And it was all about busting each other's chops and having fun. And the cool thing about working with Frank is Frank and I are exactly the same age. He's 2 weeks older than me.
Oh, my goodness.
52 now.
That hits home.
But the cool thing about Frank is he liked a lot more than just football. I mean, he liked sort of a lot of the same geeky stuff that I do, whether it's rock bands or Star Wars and all that kind of stuff. And we had that similar, being similar age. And Paul, our producer, was the same way. He's about a month older than me or younger than me. And so we connected in that way. And with Mark, it was a lot of, Mark is an encyclopedia of sports and had been around this area for so long that he understood how it all worked and who to talk to and just how things had come about, whether it was the Preds or the Titans getting here, and had covered all that stuff. So the chemistry worked right away. It was really a lot of fun, and it was just neat to see over the years how the listeners connected. And even at, we haven't done the show for 4 years since 2000, but even since then, the amount of people that have come up to me and said, "Man, I sure love listening to you guys," or you know, and then you have people who are in their 20s saying, "Hey, I grew up listening to you with my dad in the car." I was like, I don't really know how I feel about that.
The freaking time.
How do you kind of reconcile that? 2/3 of that team has passed away. Yep. And so, as you said, you're right in the middle of that same age where, you know, kind of health problems on both sides was a big factor in that. But you're a great, healthy guy. You look fantastic. You've marched into seasoned veteran here all of a sudden with a lot of memories.
But isn't it funny how you go from being the young guy to being the older guy really fast?
That's correct.
Like, I used to be the kid and you know, thinking about working early 90s in Glasgow, Kentucky, or when I moved down here, I was like late 20s then. But then all of a sudden, like, you're the older dude and people are looking at you and you're like the argument settler when they're trying to come up with some piece of trivia or something. But it is interesting, and it really made me think a lot with Mark passing away almost 2 years ago and Frank just last fall. Those really hit home for me because I spent 14 years with those guys every single morning, 5 days a week. Well, sometimes Frank would be running a little late, but you know. I spent a ton of time with those dudes, and we just had so much fun, you know. And it's like pro wrestling a lot of times. You know, you hit each other with chairs, and you go get something to eat when it's over with.
Well, you now wear the C on your sweater. You're the captain, so you're the one who will lead this next generation.
Yeah, I don't know what that'll look like. I would like to think that there's maybe for me another act doing a radio show. I did mornings for 25 years. That's a lot of getting up in the middle of the night.
You look great.
Yeah, I know. I didn't realize
how. I can't believe you're 50. You're taunting us. You don't have a ring. I've never met a guy who Botox until.
Treatment
looks really good.
A lot of hormones like HGH and stuff like that.
It really kicked in. It looks good. Yeah.
Common sense would tell you not to look to Joe and John for this, but time for life lessons from Joe and John.
You're not that much older.
Did you,
John?
You're not national dream old. For you to be here? Or are you kind of we're all kind of accidental, came here, loved, made a career?
Yeah, it's probably more like that.
What was your dream? What?
I grew up in Kentucky. I grew up in Bowling Green. I went to Western Kentucky. I always wanted to do.
Yeah. Did you know that?
I graduated in 85. Yeah. I did. We were going to have a Western Kentucky segment here.
Okay. Yeah, because I got some stuff about government cheese that we're going to get into here in a little bit.
Oh, nice.
He would have been a Picasso's, perhaps. Kevin's younger. Did you know, John?
Yeah. For me, the dream was
he watched
always,
you growing up playing drums with your shirt off. Ew.
I'm still alive.
I grew up in Kentucky. I wanted to do Major League Baseball or college sports, especially SEC. I grew up on that. But Nashville, I went to Western Kentucky, graduated in 93, done a lot of high school games and things like that. I came down here. My first job here was actually doing news. And I figured out pretty quickly that I don't think that's really for me.
Yeah, I should have figured that out a lot sooner. But when I made that pivot, but you did it the other way. But good for you.
But it just worked out. I did news for a few years, and then I was kind of ready to think about maybe just doing something else. And they decided to start a sports position for the morning shows on WSM and WTN. And this was like first week of 2000 was my first week on the job. And you know what else happened the first week of 2000 was the Music City Miracle game. So my first month on the job, I covered that game. I covered the game in Indianapolis, the playoff game there, Jacksonville, the AFC Championship, and Super Bowl 34. That was my first month on the job.
That was a blur.
Wow.
It
was a blur because you didn't have that extra week between the AFC Championship and the Super Bowl. It all just rolled right together.
Joe had a kid that week.
Is that right?
Well, Super Kimmy Bowl did. Sunday.
He smoked cigarettes in the way.
I had a whiskey and a cig in the hallway, and the Titans lost. Was that Indy game? Was that the 60-plus field goal with Baronis?
No,
that's a different one.
Don't. This is amateur hour. Really shouldn't talk about the Titans with us trying to pull stuff out of there.
What that was the Eddie significant George about
it
the,
was.
68 the Eddie? That's what that one was.
It was at the old
RCA Dome.
The Hoosier Dome.
Hoosier Dome, right.
Well, I was there.
Yeah, you were there. What is the Hoosier Dome? Yeah. One thing I remember about that game, I think that's the loudest crowd of any sporting event I've ever been to. Like when Indianapolis ran out to start the game, I was like, holy cow.
But then 54,000.
Right. But yeah. The way that dome was made with the roof and everything, it was just super loud. But then by the end of the game, the Titans fans had taken over that were there. And I think that rubbed some people the wrong way up there.
Yeah. You were going to talk about just life lessons of so you got the break here and you decided to stay here.
Yeah. And my wife is from here. In fact, actually, she grew up down the street from where we're recording this, a true native Nashvillian. But
how is the neighborhood back then?
She said it was a little different than it is now.
I see.
Yeah.
She definitely didn't come past South 14th Street here.
But yeah, it's interesting to get her perspective on how Nashville has changed over the years. And even for me, it feels like it's completely different than when I moved here in 98. But I had come around Nashville a lot because I lived in Bowling Green for a long time too. And my uncle and I would come down here to Sounds games or, you know, concerts at Municipal or the KDF Half Price Fair down in the basement
of the Municipal Auditorium.
Right.
Well, I grew up in Hendersonville, so we moved here in 78. And so same story, you know, 65 was two lanes and boy, don't you wish you'd have bought every second of everything.
Oh my gosh. And Rivergate was the place to be. I mean, everybody from Bowling Green came down to Rivergate Mall.
That's correct. Kevin Ingram here, who won the League Media Award in 2018 for the Ohio Valley Conference. What were you doing in the OVC?
Belmont played in the OVC for several years, starting in 2012-2013. And so I obviously did Belmont for all those years, but then also I did football games for the OVC, also did like a Game of the Week package for ESPN3. So, that was a really neat honor. And I love those folks at the OVC. I feel bad for conferences like that to see all the shifting that's going on and teams that have been traditional sort of foundational teams for leagues like that going other places, Eastern Kentucky, Murray State. Those teams have been around, Austin Peay, been around there forever, and now they're in different conferences and it just looks completely different.
You have had an opportunity. You talk about life lessons, and this could be a whole half hour segment, and I don't even know how you're going to capsulize this in 2 minutes, but for you to be able to have the privilege, okay, you've earned your way to be the voice of Belmont or with Vandy, to work with two of the best human beings, Rick Byrd and Tim Corbin, in one lifetime, you hit the lottery. I cannot imagine the personal influence and effect and affection you have for those guys.
No question about it. Those are, if you ask me the two sports people that I've met that mean the most, it's those two guys, hands down. Spent 16 seasons with Coach Byrd. The last year was with Casey Alexander after Coach retired, and Tim Corbin for a lot of years. I covered and you probably did too, covered the press conference when Tim Corbin was hired. And I think I'm remembering this right. I think he rolled up in a U-Haul outside of Hawkins Field and came in and did the press conference. And there's a photo of him at the podium and me standing there holding a microphone, and we were much younger back then. Those two guys are so special. And I told Coach Byrd this when he retired, but my dad passed away about 10 years ago, and you still look for those voices, like even after those people are gone. And Coach Byrd became one of those voices in a lot of ways for me, and Coach Corbin too, in a different sort of way. When things went down at the radio station a few years ago, one of the people who was most encouraging toward me was Tim Corbin. I was not feeling great at that point, and I went over there in the fall to they asked me, hey, you want to come over and help out with some things with fall baseball and maybe shoot some video stuff. And about the first person I ran into was Corbs, and he told me how happy he was that I was there. And in a lot of ways, that turned things around for me. Like I felt like everything was going to be okay. Even just something simple like that he probably never remember and has probably done that for a million people. But they're both just really amazing and special people, and the influence they've had on so many people is really remarkable. But the thing that stands out, the characteristic that they share that really makes them successful, they are two of the most competitive people on this planet. I mean, Coach Byrd, you see the gentleman off the court in sort of the, you know, nice, friendly way, but man, the sweater vest, but between the lines, man, he wants to get you. And same thing for Corbs. I mean, you know, he has the greatest people skills of anyone you'll ever meet, but man, he pulls that hat down and he's down there in that dugout or that third base coach's box, man, it's go time.
So, Kevin, insight to broadcasting. You were talking about your exodus from 104.5, the sports show. How did you find out? Did the door even open?
We've talked about about co-hosts that have passed away. We're talking about
bring it down.
Let's just bring it down and another notch.
Mine was
what killed your career. On the morning show.
Mine was I'll state broadcasting's a stupid bird. Mine from KDF was walked in to go to work and hey, can you come back here for a second? And then that was it. I was right back out the door, and that was before KDF turned country. They were just slowly picking us off one at a time. So, and you're not expecting it. You know, I was going to drive to Atlanta after the show that day and go play golf with my brother in a tournament and such. And summer vacation was coming up, you know, had it all planned out.
Oh, you had vacation. All right.
And I sure did. I had that pilot's license.
You'll be able to play 36. Yeah.
So you laugh at it now, but it turns your life upside down when it happens.
It sure does. And,
so do tell.
So we did the show on a Monday morning, and this was during COVID where everybody's at home and we're doing the show on Zoom.
Oh, boy.
And so the show ends at 10 o'clock, and then about 10:05, I get a call, and it's like management and the HR person and all that. And it's like, thanks for playing, you know, it's over.
That's it. It's done.
It was a call?
Yeah, it was a call.
It wasn't come in 6 feet away?
No. And,
that's bullshit. That's, I mean,
well, it was COVID. They
there's
could
no
get away
easy
with
way
it.
To do yeah. it, but that's, come on now.
They could get away with it.
You know, I've tried to be very careful and not go too far in telling all this, but
wait until you're 10 years out. Right, then right. I have burned every bridge now.
Even 4 years out, sometimes it's not the how is bad enough, but the what was too. I wish they would have. I would have taken it better if they said, "Hey, come in. Thanks for you've done a great job here. Yeah. Thanks for your service. We're moving in a different direction." That would have gone down a little easier. But in the end, I actually wrote a song about it called Canned on a Conference Call.
Nice. Well, it's you look back.
It's probably a lot of people could relate to that, actually.
Yeah. I don't know a person that's gone through it. They don't look back, and it trips them in a new direction, which you definitely landed stronger. And probably with more consistency, morning radio will kill you. It is a rough life. You're in bed. As John said, he missed 6 Super Bowls for his doing tenure when he was doing morning news. Yeah. And you've landed in a better spot with your family and a better life with Vanderbilt. Great place to work, no doubt. It's going to be here forever. So hang on.
One thing I will say is I didn't realize how tired I was until I didn't do morning radio for a while. I mean, because I didn't exactly go to bed at 8 o'clock. Like I'd stay up and watch the games and go to bed at 10:30 or 11 and get up at 3:30.
Just grind through it.
Yeah, you grind through it and then you go home and take a nap and then go call a game and then come back and sleep an hour and do the show, and you just do it because that's what you do.
And you did it so well.
Rapid fire.
Do you know how this works?
I like watching John run the board. This is one of my favorite parts of this show.
I have sprained. I've got to put Icy Hot on my right elbow and that first intro stinger that I didn't nail. But go ahead. Do you know how this works? Nothing's rapid. Nothing is slow. But go ahead, Joe. What do you got?
So music's a part. You wrote a song. What's in your CD player now? What are you listening to?
I am a classic rock dude.
All right, now.
Well, or in back in the day, we just called it rock, you know?
That's it.
I grew up on KDF. Okay. I listened to Joe. I listened to the whole crew.
Oh, here
back
we
then.
Go.
You know, 80s KDF was
there was nothing
was
better.
My jam. You know, it was Carl P in the morning. You know, then from there, and it was not lost on me that we did our show for a lot of years from that building, 506 Second Avenue,
where
KDF was. But yeah, I love all the classic rock stuff. I like country. I like a little bit of everything, but rock is my main thing. I grew up with my uncle. I spent a lot of time with my uncle, and he was this old rock and roll dude from the 70s. In fact, he was a DJ at a rock station in Kentucky, and I spent a lot of time with him. And in the summertime, about all we do is like listen to Led Zeppelin and watch baseball. So a lot of influence from him, but I still listen to all the same stuff. 70s, 80s rock is my favorite.
I'm going to pivot. I was going to ask a pet peeve. We'll get to that in a second, but let's talk about Government Cheese, Joe, in this band.
it feels like a good spot to talk about.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Segue. You got to keep things tight. what's your, did you know he was in government or did you hear that?
Oh, no question. I mean,
so the Joe King, legend drummer for a band that's been around 40 years. You have a gig coming up. My wife said I don't keep up with you, but my wife does.
Well, we'll see if Kevin knows. Do you know where Duncan Hines is from?
He's from my hometown of Bowling Green, Kentucky, right?
I never knew it. Mm-hmm. I graduated from Western and hung around there for years as our home base for the band. And we're playing the Duncan Hines Festival June 8th. It's about a 5,000 people festival to celebrate Duncan Hines.
Did you get like free cake mix or anything like that?
He's from Bowling Green. You know, they didn't. I thought they could. They do a great job. They have these cool shirts and stuff. But I thought, wouldn't it be funny if we just started heaving cakes at people? Food fight!
Like, you think like Duncan Hines is like this, you know, guy who baked cakes and stuff. But he was really like a restaurant reviewer who put his name on products.
Did you ever go see Government Cheese?
Yes, I did. Okay. So
don't lie.
One of my first. No, I really did. I've seen him a couple times. One of my first radio jobs was working at the student station at Western at New Rock 92.
Yeah.
And so every year we'd have this concert in the fall, like this benefit concert to raise money for the station. I never knew A, if we raised any money, or B, where the money actually went. Mm-hmm. I think they brought new incense for the studio or something. But one year the headlining act for this concert was Government Cheese.
Yeah.
So my friend Doug Tabor and I, we were kind of the production guys for the radio station. And so we made these promos for this rock concert. And you would have thought it was like Led Zeppelin with special guest Metallica. Government Cheese.
How good is that?
Rabbit Manor.
Rabbit Manor.
Interconnectivity here, guys. That's this is fun. Good stuff.
Well, and Kevin was on the real station. I was on the radio station WKYU-AM. It was Campus Current.
I was going to say Carrier Current. Yeah.
Or whatever it's called. You had to be plugged into a campus outlet.
Literally had station. To be plugged in.
You did.
I was on that at Butler University.
It was
then,
great.
Yeah.
And the girls in the dorm, the big girls in the dorm would call and say something. But I just thought, I say something here, somebody hears it there, and then calls me. I just was blown away with radio. Loved it.
Yeah, you know, and you think a million people are listening, and it's really like 15 at most.
My proctor was listening, because on Carrier Current, my first shift, I thought I was getting away playing Precious by the Pretenders. Explicit lyrics.
Yeah, baby.
She goes, so... F off, you know, and I'm like, oh man, it's cool. I got played that. And then the hotline rang. Yeah. John, what are you doing? Pet peeve. Give me a pet peeve.
A pet peeve. I don't know. Maybe something with calling games, time and score. You always give the time and score as much as possible, especially like if you're calling basketball where the score changes a lot. Do the basics. You can come up with something cool to say at a big moment, but really the basics are the basics.
Stay to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an in-depth pet peeve. I was waiting for, you know, didn't use a turn signal.
That's a whole different
toilet
thing.
Paper is not, you know, rolled the right way.
Yeah, traffic is
a
pet peeve.
That was good. That was very deep. I like that.
I actually thought of that on the fly. But yeah, traffic is probably the biggest pet peeve around here.
Do you ever call, so, you know, you're a couple decades of play-by-play, you ever call a guy a wrong name? Either on purpose because you just can't figure it out and go, well, nobody's going to know who the forward from Pepperdine State is on this broadcast.
I try to be a stickler for the names and pronunciations, but sometimes you just don't, there's nobody to ask. One thing I found is like sometimes if the team doesn't send a media relations person, you can go down to the families. They might be down in the stands, like doing some soccer matches. You know, you don't always have anybody to ask for pronunciations. Like the best people to ask them, I just go down and ask some of the families of the players, and sometimes they know and sometimes they don't. Sometimes the coaches don't even know how to say them correctly. But I hate that. And that's something that's a big thing for me, is trying to get the names right. And especially, I found it almost more stressful doing high school games because for parents of high school kids, like this is the record of their kid playing. And this might be all the ball they ever play. And you don't want some idiot on TV or radio saying their kid's name wrong. So I always found that even more important.
1980 high school jamboree in Mishawaka, Indiana. We made the highlights, and I'll never forgive Lynn Thornton of the CBS affiliate calling me John Hams. It's Hammes.
Hams on the field.
So I always, to your point, always went, it is the only time. And let's just try to get that right. How did you meet your Nashville wife?
We met at a Nashville Cats game.
Mm. She was in the hot tub. You knew. You set me, put that out on a tee. I know. Hit that.
No, you remember when like Joe Salavea was down in the hot tub at the Cats games? That it's funny. Like when I think about Nashville Cats games, and I think a lot of people probably like you think the hot tub. Actually, it was a setup deal. My wife had worked with Paul Bible, who was our producer, and they had another mutual friend. And my wife's friend had heard me on the radio because they were supporting Paul, listening to the show. And my wife's friend told her, is like, that's the guy for you right there, that Kevin guy. So they set it all up, and Paul and I would do like halftime contest of the Cats games. So Amy, my wife, and Lisa, her friend, they come to this game, and we all sit together, and nobody's told me anything about that this is a setup and you're supposed to meet this girl. And I didn't know what was going on. So, you know, I said hello, and Amy's like, well, he didn't pay any attention to me, so that's that. I did my part. I showed up. I fulfilled my obligation. So it's the same day that the Titans are going to have interview opportunities with their new draft picks, which included Michael Roos and, yes, Pac-Man Jones. So I'm killing some time between the Cats game and going over to the Titans facility. So I walked down the street to get something to eat at the Broadway Brew House or whatever it was called back then. And I walk in, and there's Amy and Lisa, and we sat and talked, and it all went from there. And I knew I might have the right girl when they asked them to put the TV on golf. And I was like, women don't ever ask to watch golf.
Has Kimmy ever done that? Lindley is cannot push. She goes, why do we even have cable? You only watch one channel.
I love it. Yeah. Well, Kim and I's first date was a blind date, my wife, because she golfed. I'd never met a woman who played golf. Yeah. I love to golf. John and I have golfed many times together. We both love it. And she golfed. And she kicks ass with that driver in her hand. And I thought, okay, here we go. And that was 30 years ago. So
it's golf terrific. Is in your, it's you guys best. Got so much more. This is going to be best. This is going to be a man, it's the best. A bromance going on here.
It's
going
to be the second cup of Joe and Kevin, pal.
I was going to ask you guys.
Like, I run the board.
HR's downstairs. And we're going to.
If this goes well, can I get like an internship or something like that?
No credit, no pay. Right. So we all started.
I've done some of that.
You got one more question, Joe?
I do, Hams. So,
old John Hams.
Thanks, Lynn Thornton, you jackass.
What's next? Maybe, you kind of graduated from the radio a bit. Would you go back to that? Do you want something a little more steady? That's because being in broadcasting can be some horrible schedules. You want to plan something? Good luck. And are you trying to get a groove going now?
I don't know. I'm not sure what would be next. As I said a little bit earlier, I think there might be another chapter to radio. I don't know that I'd want to go back to 5 days a week doing mornings and getting up at 3 o'clock and all that. If I could find something that was kind of user-friendly and worked with what I do at Vanderbilt, I would like to explore that. I think, and you guys would agree, you always have those things out there that you want to do. Like for me, I'd like to call a Major League Baseball game sometime, even if it was just one. I'd like to do the Final Four at some point. I actually went to the championship game a couple weeks ago with my friend Chris Dortch. He got inducted into the U.S. Basketball Writers Hall of Fame. So we went out to Phoenix and they had the lunch, and then we went to the championship game. And I looked down and I saw those dudes calling that game. I was like, man, that would be the coolest ever. And really, for me, to call the SEC tournament at Bridgestone Arena was a big deal because I'd gone to that thing forever. Even like in the old Georgia Dome, I'd go sit in the upper deck and I'd always look down there in press row. I was like, man, I want to sit down there one of these days. And to sit on the front row and call those games, it's been really special.
And you will.
And you did it. Yeah, that's cool.
Joe and John have come to the fork in the road.
So I'm going to rip my co-host. Your last question was essentially fork in the road. You know this is the segments we do. And you just jumped the count there, dog.
I did think of that. I did. A little too late. I did.
A little too late. So there is a moment, though,
I got
probably.
Another one if you want.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. What advice would you give your 18-year-old self now?
Change majors immediately.
Or government cheese.
Or go to some government cheese shows and go from there. Yeah, is it Picasso's? Is that what you said?
That's where we lived for a long time.
What, is that a pizza place? What is it?
No, it was Picasso's. A bar.
A bar?
It was the hot spot in Bowling Green back in the day. Burned down.
Did it really?
Yeah. Flare gun.
That Mariah's.
Some stupid with a flare gun.
Yeah, I remember.
Burned the place down to the ground.
That's a true story. I never knew that about that song for a long time.
The Deep Purple song?
Yeah,
that is. It's all true. In fact, it was a Iggy Pop or one of those other, it was at a famous show. And one of his,
Frank Zappa.
Frank Zappa, thank you, yeah. Boy, did we get off the rails here quickly. Wow, that was amazing.
I was working the morning Mariah's burned down. I was doing news that morning, and this dude calls like, "Hey man, Mariah's is on fire."
Oh man, Mariah's was just a great go-to restaurant in Bowling Green. Yep. You could take a date, or you could go with your buddies and sit at the bar and drink. Whatever night you felt like doing, you could do it in Mariah's. It was always fun.
As far as advice,
it's still back open. It's back.
Yeah,
open.
It's not just the same.
It ain't the same at all.
Advice to younger self, I guess just stay the course that it's all going to be okay. And you guys experienced this too. There are spots where you think it's over or you think you're going to go in a different direction, but just stay on course and don't be afraid to try different things. I talk to students sometimes, and one of the things I always try to stress is like, there's no such thing as bad experience as long as it fits some way in what you're trying to do. I've done a little bit of everything from I've DJed, I've worked at an NPR station doing mornings. I've done news. I've done, you know, sports reporting a bit, done play by play and all that stuff. I also have worked on stat crews when I was in college and a few years after at Western. I would help do stats for basketball and football games, do the same thing with the Titans, do the in-house PA for that and work with the stat crew. And you really learn a lot about the inner workings of those sports. So don't turn down opportunities. Find what you like. You'll find some stuff you didn't even know you liked. Like, I don't know that I ever really envisioned myself doing a sports talk show, but that became one of the things for me that's been one of the highlights of my career was all the years we did that show. So yeah, just try a lot of different things and just keep showing up. Just do your best and show up until they tell you not to show up.
Was there a job or another market or place that you didn't get the job or some fork in the road where you maybe wouldn't have been in there? I had a news director who I interviewed with in Winston-Salem, North Carolina in 1987. He dropped dead of a heart attack 2 weeks later and forgot. My interview was, nobody knew I was at the station for the job, and I thought I had it. I thought I had a job in Phoenix, Arizona before Nashville, and I was told I had the job, didn't get it. A year later, they blew up the sports department.
Wow.
I went out there for an Oilers game, and I said, show me the Channel 15, pretty boy. And they're like, they don't have the sports anymore. I'm like, that could have been me. Okay, right. So forks in the road. Anything, any good stories like that? Or
I don't know that I've never really thought too much about moving somewhere else. I mean, you always look around and say, oh, that job might be fun, but sometimes dream jobs are more fun to think about than they might actually be.
The grass is always browner.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone that has left Nashville in a position like you've had with your experience that goes somewhere else and it gets better. It might be better, but like for a year, and then it gets shut down. Now you're back on the road again, and then you circle back to a town like Nashville, where you're comfortable and make a great living, and then go, well, I just really should have never left.
And the problem is, too, if you go somewhere else, you're new. They don't know you. You don't know them.
No.
Nashville, you know a little bit of everybody around here, even though it's turned over and there are lots of new people that have moved here or working here. But you still have those connections to a lot of different folks in this town.
Listen,
you gotta wear shades.
Listen, you missed my cue.
Listen. So the future's so bright that I think you should get John and I employment at Vanderbilt in the sports. Everybody else works there. Andrew Marinus was a guest on our show.
Andrew's awesome. Yes, you know, I know Andrew.
And what's he do? He was writing.
He's like the historian for Vanderbilt Athletics.
Okay, historian. And so you're the digital coordinator. He wasn't really sure what his title meant. You're not really sure what your title means. So we want a gig like that. We're in Vanderbilt and we love it, and here we go, and we don't know what we do, but we're here.
Yeah, it's just one of the things. You wear a lot of hats, whatever your title is. But Andrew is such a sharp dude, and man, he's a fantastic writer, like his father.
Yeah, and, big fan of his dad.
Yeah,
read everything.
And what happened? Let's talk about Vanderbilt's future.
Getting jobs there, Joe, because you. If they listen to the podcast,
I love Vanderbilt. I love
it. I know you. Well, it's been a wounded, so, kind of a jilted lover for you because you have been a big supporter.
Well, since I did move here in 78, and Vanderbilt, there's a localness. Greg Pogue commented on it. He thought Stackhouse's problem was he did not identify with the community. He didn't get out there and gin up like Franklin did for Vanderbilt football. If you weren't energized by Vanderbilt football when James Franklin was here, you weren't paying attention. And so he claims that both basketball and football need that kind of synergy around the coach.
I think that's really important, whether you're in Nashville or you're in any of the SEC places, to make that connection with the fan base. And you're talking about James Franklin. He did probably do that better than
he came on my rock
most
show.
Most anybody.
He would go anywhere.
To he would call on our team. He would call on our show and all those things.
That's but what you
one, do, one thing I always say that Franklin did is he made it cool to be a Vanderbilt football fan.
Right.
And plus they won. And that's really hard to do at Vanderbilt. But yeah, making those connections with the community is really important. We talked about Tim Corbin. He's so good at that. You watch him and he just connects with people in such a way that he makes you feel, whether you've known him 20 years, you've known him 5 minutes, he makes you feel like you're his friend. Clark Lee is very good at that. I tell you what, Shea Ralph, the women's basketball coach, she's another one of those people that's ultra competitive, but really good with the people skills too, and is a good coach. I think she's going to do a great job. Got him to the tournament this year. I'll be interested to see how Mark Byington does as head coach. First impressions, big thumbs up. I thought he did a great job with the introduction. Just going around and watching him interact with people. I thought he really did well. I got along great with Coach Stackhouse. In fact, I consider him a friend and will continue to be kind of similar age person. And we felt like we connected. I love college basketball, especially like old, like 80s, 90s college basketball. So we connected over those things. He was obviously a great player at North Carolina and the NBA. And I wish Coach and everyone that was part of that staff all the best. But you're right. You do have to connect with the community. And you see coaches in different places that really do a great job of that. And I think even if things don't go well on the field or on the court, if you have those connections, people will give you the benefit of the doubt for a bit longer if you're able to do that.
So help me with the call. When you're doing the Vanderbilt call, for folks who've never been to Memorial Gym, the teams sit under the basket.
Uh-huh.
So the student section is pinned right up against the sidelines, but lower, below sea level. It's so unique. Where are you guys making the call?
Okay, we're right next to the student section. If you look at it on TV and you see the student section almost right at midcourt, if you look to the right, we're at that same level looking up at the players. It is the most unique and, to me, the most difficult place to call a basketball game that there is.
Okay.
In fact, I was thinking about that when we were at the championship game and out in Arizona, because it's the same sort of setup for the announcers. That they ought to come to Vanderbilt and get a little practice in before they come out here.
Yeah, that's amateur hour compared to what you're doing.
It's so different because, most places you go and it's kind of a traditional setup where you're up on the sideline, you're at the table, you're right there next to the court. Here you're way back off the sideline. It's a much lower angle. You really have to watch the official signals, especially the opposite corner is the hardest place to see. Trying to watch three-pointers or if there's a scramble play under the basket, it's really hard. The end of the Florida game, which was the last home game, there was a scramble play at the end, and I was really kicking myself when it was over with. I didn't feel like I described it well enough. Part of it was I just couldn't see what was going on. It was happening really fast, and there's a lot of people between you and where the basketball is. So you cheat a little bit off the TV monitor, too.
Final question, and I'll let John take over here. John tells a story. One of his worst days was going to Oakland and covering the Titans-Raiders game.
I remember that.
With a sea of batteries and anything else that he could say or throw at him. Do you have a worst venue that was just difficult for you to do your job?
Worst venue. I think you, some places you kind of have to be careful with the student sections located right behind where you are. The Swamp is kind of like that. I've done sidelines there a whole bunch of times, and the kids are like right there. The stands are really close to the sideline there. And for basketball too, and Gainesville, same way. I went back and listened to the game that we did a few weeks ago when we played down in Gainesville, and there was a young lady who screamed the entire game. And I'm like, it's 18-point margin with about 30 seconds left. Can you dial it back just a little bit here?
Okay, well, this is a segue. I just thought of this. What's your take? And you've got to answer this incredibly politically correct. But go ahead and say, nobody listens. Okay, so.
I listen.
The Whistler at Vanderbilt Baseball.
Oh, good question.
Good or bad for Vanderbilt?
And describe the Whistler for someone who doesn't know.
There are actually two Whistlers, and they whistle with especially when Vanderbilt.
Go on a date then. I mean, if they're whistling each other.
What a fun night that'd be.
The funny thing, a lot of people ask me about the Whistler, and the Whistler drives opposing fans crazy. The Vanderbilt fans sort of embrace it and clap along.
But he's loud. I mean, you hear it on TV. Yeah. It rings through the stadium.
Uh-huh. It's like three whistles and three claps and, you know, that sort of thing.
There's a no-win answer here. You know that.
Okay. The thing is, for me, I don't hear it. I've heard it so much that I tune it out.
So, are we talking about marriage? Are you talking about the whistle?
Did you just call out Amy?
No. Wait a minute. I'm lost. What are we talking about?
I heard Amy.
I didn't hear
she
Amy.
She would say the same thing.
Amy's love name is the Whistler, and she doesn't know why.
But the Whistler at Vanderbilt, I don't hear it. I kind of tune it out. Sometimes if I go back and watch a game, or if I'm watching a game on TV, I'll hear it. But if I'm calling a game, I guess you're sort of focused on what's going on, and I just don't really notice it that much.
Okay, because we're going over and we're biting into your time. No, you have no place to go.
I have no place to go, man. We can do a double episode.
He works at Vanderbilt.
You move here in the late 90s. The trajectory with the new stadium, with the football stadium, we're going to get the Final Four. We're going to get all that stuff. In over under 2030, Major League Baseball in Nashville.
Come on.
I don't know.
Big money.
Come on. I kind of
the group set up.
The group is set up.
And I
heard what Greg Pogue said about this too, that a few years ago, he might've said, absolutely not. 5 years ago, now maybe a different feel. From everything I've heard, that like the group is in place, but you got to have the money to make it happen. And it would likely be an expansion team. I think sooner or later, it probably does. I don't know that I've been totally rooting for Major League Baseball in Nashville. I love the Cincinnati Reds. That is my favorite team my whole life. And it would be hard for me to connect with another team like I have. I went to the most recent World Series game in Cincinnati, which was in 1990. That was a long time ago.
Tom Browning.
Yep. They were actually looking for him that night because he'd gone to the hospital. His wife was getting ready to have a baby, and the game went extra innings. They thought they were going to have him pitch. Old Denver ballgame. But as far as Major League Baseball in Nashville, I think it probably will happen sooner or later. How it will look will be really interesting. Like, where will the stadium be? Will it be downtown next to the new Titan Stadium? Will it be, I know there's been talk of it being over toward Tennessee State, like an area like that to try to redevelop. I don't know. I don't know totally how I feel about that. And people say, well, you know, you could do Major League Baseball if it comes to Nashville.
Yes.
It's like, by the time that, I'll be like 75 by then.
No, you know what? This is, you're going to be the guy.
That could be it, Kevin.
You're
going to
be
great.
This is going to happen.
The Nashville Banner has a great article on it. And now talk is that it's going to go to the burbs. Like Atlanta moved the stadium to where the people
Marietta.
Are.
Mm-hmm.
And so that our stadium could be in Hendersonville or towards Mount Juliet. One of these big old farms and such. And the Nashville Sounds still get funding from the city, but the Sounds owner says, I think we can both coexist. And I'm like, how?
The Sounds aren't
even full on any night. And it's just, it's going to be a tough road, but it would be great. You could see the Reds right here in Nashville.
Right. I wouldn't have to drive 4 hours like I do every year.
Well, Kevin, it's been great. It's a quick hour. You're kind. the one thing that you alluded to about not leaving Nashville is I think the beauty of being in broadcasting, and especially when Joe and I were, we wanted to kick everybody's ass, right? But at the end of the day, we did have that beer afterwards. We got along with, you know, I think about, you know, Mark Howard and him and I got at it pretty good. But we always did it respectfully, and I think of you, and I think of others that I can't remember the call letters and who worked for what. But you had to be a good dude or a good person, a good girl, you know, uh-huh. Sarah Walsh or any of the others that kind of broke through here in sports broadcasting. Don't you think, Joe? I mean, there's kind of this code. Don't be a jerk.
Yeah,
and that's kind of the Nashville way. And I'm sort of proud that I spent a little bit of time there as you did. You buying any of this loving piece?
I do, because as Kevin's proved, and you and myself in a way, you don't want to piss people off, because here you're looking at how many jobs you've had since 104 and stuff, and Nashville's not that big a city. Broadcasting's not that big. I don't care if you're in Philadelphia. Probably someone from Nashville in Philadelphia now that you worked with, and now, oh, we want to hire Kevin. No, you don't. Or, yes, you do. You know, it's just in any.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
Well, go ahead.
The one thing I've always appreciated, and I want to make sure I mention this, and is that I always appreciated how everyone sort of made me feel at home doing sports here. Whether it's you, I mean, I've known John for, what, over 20 years probably. whether it's, you know, Pete Weber and Terry Crisp or Mike Keith or, you know, Joe Fisher, who's a dear friend, all those people just, and all like the local sports anchors, whether it was, you know, whether it's Hope or Rudy or whoever it might be, everybody always made me feel like I was part of the group, whether it's covering Titans or whatever we were doing. It didn't take very long for me to feel like I fit in. And I always really appreciated that.
Well, may God bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you, Kevin Ingram. Your best days are ahead of you.
Thank you, guys.
They really are in leadership in this city.
And this is fantastic because in 2030, opening day for the Nashville Stars, voice of the Stars, Kevin Ingram, thank you for being on the Second Cup of Joe. And John.
It's the Second Cup of Joe and John as their guests expound on any and all topics within the realm of decency. Want to be a sponsor? Let a TV and radio guy help build your business. Email the show, secondcupofjoeandjohn@gmail.com. Now, hold on tight and grab another Second Cup of Joe and John.